Okay, great. This is David Klein, and I'm in Louisville, Kentucky on August the 3rd with Mr. Carmen Weathers. And if you want to just introduce yourself, and then
launch
right into this family.
Yeah, my name's Carmen Weathers. I'm a native Louisvillian, and I was telling Mr. Klein the uniqueness of my position is that my family has been in Jefferson County, Louisville, since as far as we can go back to 1845.
No. I want to make sure it gets...
No, not at all.
Sit a little closer together.
So I have been kind of firsthand with this situation for a long time. Secondly, I was in the Louisville public school system before it was Jefferson County. And I've kind of had a unique perspective of seeing things unfold over the years. And so that kind of gives me some insight. You know.
What year were you born?
I was born in 1936.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. I have a birthday coming up pretty soon.
Yeah. 2 years after my death.
One of the things that's unique is that I have seen the thing unfold from strict segregation to voluntary integration or desegregation to the current plan that we have. And through it all, I have seen, in my estimation, progress or lack of progress of black children. And that's ultimately where my concerns were over the last 15 to 20 years.
Were you born here?
Born right here, okay. Right here. Been here. Of course, I've been other places also.
Right.
But my family, as I said initially, has been here since 1845, so we kind of have a stake in what goes on here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're not immigrants. We didn't come in. We've just been here.
Right.
And
where did you go to schools?
I went to Central High School.
Which elementary school did you go to?
Well, I went to S.C. Taylor Elementary School.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Madison Junior High School and Central High School.
Mm-hmm.
Needless to say, I'm always reminded that people tell me that this is not the same Central that exists now that existed when you were there, and I understand that this is not the same world that exists now.
Mm-hmm.
So for you to think that I think that things are exactly the same is, I won't comment on that. But the point, it's ridiculous. But what I do know, that the same problems that existed then exist now. And the same cultural and social impediments that get in the way of black development that existed then exist now.
What problems specifically do you...
Well, what I'm saying is that this is just Carmen Weathers' theory.
Yeah,
later. When 1865, when the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment, all those amendments did was tell us or point us in a direction. 6 to 8 million people were let go and did not have a plan. We were told now you're suddenly free and you can compete, which everybody knew was fallacious at both.
Mm-hmm.
How could you compete and you had been on this soil in slavery for 300 years? And as a result of that non-competitive stance that we came out of slavery with, we still have not ever been able to compete. Because in my view, the biggest impediment to our advancement on these shores is our victimhood then and now. See, the victimhood of black people did not stop. A lot of people assumed that legally there was no reason for you to feel like you were a victim. But the culture, the social fabric of this nation had already built a place for you, a niche for you and your victimhood. Mm-hmm. And my contention is that exists today. I mean, how else can you explain the position that we're in when you measure us by every other ethnic group in this country? We're either innately stupid or something else is impacting on us.
Right.
And you don't want to deal with what's impacting on us because that involves cost. Mm-hmm. See, to say we could ride on a bus involved no cost at all. To say that we could vote, to say we could do all the things that you allowed us to do as a result of the civil rights legislation, mm-hmm. involved no cost. But every time cost, or that you have to give up something, when I say you, I mean America, the people that make decisions, every time we have insisted that you pay some cost, you have reneged. And we find ourselves in 205, you refusing to pay the cost, and me having to pay the cost of you not paying the cost, mm-hmm. with my underdevelopment as a people. Mm-hmm. Of course, you didn't come for these speeches. And
no,
I,
well, I'm interested, you know, so the theory of Carmen Weathers. developed over time?
That's a good, because see, I was a civil writer.
Yeah.
I believed in the goodness of people, that all you needed to do was to see that we had the same aspirations and we shared the same birthright, that all you had to do was find it out, and then you would voluntarily take all of these impediments from me. And consequently, as a result of my drive and my initiative, that I would be able to overcome. Obviously, I was wrong, because that hasn't happened. And as we go on, you see more rigid impediments being put into place. And people that used to be, unquote, on the line in a civil rights war are no longer soldiers. In fact, they stopped being soldiers and then they started to be spectators, and now they are soldiers again, but not in defense of America. So I've seen this transformation, and we call it a lot of things. We call it conservatism, we call it Democrats, but it all goes down to one thing: finding their place and everybody else's place in this country. And that's what has happened to us.
So what do you do to keep on fighting that?
What do I do? I do everything that I can do. I volunteer. I try to get... Well, let me show you what... Let me tell you about Carmen's war record.
All right.
Yeah, my war record. I, about 15, 20 years ago, I was... in the public school system. And my colleagues used to say...
As a teacher?
Yeah. Because that's about as the best I could do at the time, because I was at war constantly with the system. Mm-hmm. I used to write an article about once every 2 or 3 months in the paper, and people would say, how can you maintain your job when you're attacking the school system? Well, I didn't see that as a way of, that I had to be apologetic to the school system as a way of maintaining my job. In fact, I've always felt like if I were qualified for a job in the Jefferson County Public School System, my political views had nothing to do with my fitness for the job. Mm. So I didn't see myself as being threatened by my politics. Mm-hmm. Other people saw me as being threatened by my politics, but I never have. Otherwise, I wouldn't have written all the articles and things that I did criticizing the superintendent and the administration and their policies. Mm-hmm. So a long time ago, I became an advocate for what I thought was the right path or the right set of policies to do some things for my people. Now, when I don't want to sound colloquial by saying my people, white people do not need Carmen Weathers to look out for them. Mm-hmm. They have always been in a position to look out for themselves. It's me and my group that have never had people in a position to look out for them. And so that's what I chose to do. I chose to talk about black issues because black issues did not have the people to look out for black issues that black issues needed. Mm-hmm. So a long time ago, I understood that I would never go far in Jefferson County Public Schools in terms of going up the ladder in terms of the administration and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Because I made those decisions early on that I was going to speak the truth to power, mm-hmm. and that that would be a price that I would have to pay, and I willingly paid that price. So I'm not going to talk about all the people who entered the system at the same time I did and came out principals and superintendents and everything and are in some instances less qualified. Mm-hmm. I have two master's degrees, so on paper I'm qualified to do a lot of things that I was never allowed to do. But there's one thing I was allowed to do through me being who I am, and that was speak out in behalf of my people. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people didn't do that.
Yeah, and that kept you from being promoted up the ladder.
Of course it did.
Yeah.
And in other words, it got me in a backhanded sort of way. One of the reasons you're here talking to me now is because of that. The superintendent who I had been so critical of decided that he was going to shut me up. So he put me on a monitoring committee to look at the current student assignment plan. That's how Carmen Weathers got on the monitoring committee.
Mm-hmm. Which superintendent was that?
Ingwersen.
Okay. Can we back up just a second? Mm-hmm. I want to just get the chronology right to how you came to teaching. So, Central grad, and then went to JSU to play football and got your BA there.
Mm-hmm.
In what year?
58.
Okay, and then what?
I coached 1 year in Gulfport, Mississippi. Mm-hmm. I was a basketball coach. Well, I was a basketball player in high school too, so it didn't matter. I was assistant football coach, but my basketball team was run up in the state of Mississippi. But I decided that I needed to get a master's degree, so I went to Chicago, went to Detroit, where I have family, and I got a master's at Wayne State University. Uh-huh. And then I was still convinced that I was going to be the greatest coach that ever was, and I tried it for about the next 10 or 12 years.
What was the master's in?
Physical education.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you've been
and then,
coaching?
Yeah, but there was no coaching for me in the state of Kentucky. We only had one head football coach in the whole state, and I think we have two now. Mm. I want to say that again. Mm-hmm. We had one then, and we have two now.
Black head coaches.
Right.
Yeah.
We had one then, and 50 or 40, we have two. Mm. The second one being, we have two here in Louisville, Kentucky.
What do you think about that?
Well, I don't need to think about it. What do you think about it?
It doesn't show a whole lot of change, does it?
Hmm. We had one then, and we've got two now. And of course we have, there's no denying our representation on the football teams.
Yeah.
But so anyway, I went back to my alma mater to coach.
Mm-hmm.
for 4 or 5 years, and then I became
at Central.
No, I went back to Jackson State.
Oh, to Jackson State, yeah.
And that was doing Bear Bryant's. You know, I'm just telling you this. I'm telling you how I arrived at certain points in my life.
That's great. That's what I want to know.
While I was at Jackson State, we had 17 young men to be drafted 1 year. It's never been done before. Signed and drafted as free agents, we had 17. SC, Southern Cal, at that point in time, was a national champion, and they had 8. So that gives you an idea. We had 24% of the NFL draft came from 8 historically black colleges in the Southwest Conference. That's Tennessee State, Grambling, Jackson State, Valley State, Alcorn, Texas Southern, Arkansas, and Prairie View. From those schools, 24% of the entire NFL draft.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and at that point, people began to make some decisions about this. And one of the people that helped them make decisions was Bear Bryant, who was the current coach at University of Alabama. At that point in time, Bear, Alabama, played Southern Cal in Tuscaloosa. Southern Cal had a running back named Sam Bam Cunningham, who scored 6 touchdowns on Alabama. And Bear made, this is rumor, that Bear made the statement of, where is my NI, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If this one can beat me, don't we have any in Alabama? And somebody says, you have a lot of them in Alabama. And from that point on, black, historically black colleges were doomed. Okay, we had 7 kids out of Mobile. We never got the top one out of Mobile again. After that, he had made that decision. Right. Of course, it was a snowball. After he made the decision in Alabama, every school in the Southeastern Conference made a similar decision. Okay. Up until that time, we had those kids. So after about a couple of more years, I said, you know, this is going to take me not where I really want to go. With the energy that you have to expend and dedication you have to have, is this really what I want to do? So I decided to come home. Mm-hmm. And I came to Louisville. And I've been here involved in this struggle one way or another since that point in time.
About what year was that? Do you remember when you...
I came home in 72.
And started teaching in the...
Yeah, at Russell Junior High School.
Mm-hmm.
It was Russell. When I attended, it was Madison.
Oh, okay. And I changed that.
Same junior high school. And the first problem we had is they decided it was old and they wanted to close it. And they had a very good reason for wanting to close it. And if they closed it, then all the black kids that were there could help integrate all the white schools that were not going to be closed.
They'd have to go somewhere else, right?
So we haven't had a white school close for that reason.
How many black schools did close, do you remember?
Well,
I know there were.
Let me put it another way to you. In the whole West End of Louisville, where 90% of all your black people live, there is not but 2 middle schools. So that what that means is, if you're a middle school student, you got to get on the bus.
Mm-hmm.
Right there, at that corner right there, 8 buses pick up kids. 8 buses, so that means that the kids who live in this neighborhood go to 8 different ones.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not opposed to that. If getting on that bus would mean that you're going to close the gap intellectually, achievement gap. But to put my kids on that bus, send them on an hour and a half, a 2-hour ride, and they come back just as ignorant, even more so. Because they get on the bus and they ride, and they are not in the classroom with the other kids, with the white kids who live in that neighborhood. So their only integrated in the restrooms and the lunchroom. And so I fought against that. It doesn't make sense to me. It seems like it's wasted effort. So I became an opponent of the student assignment plan.
Have you seen changes over time in that, or is it?
It's not any better now than it was. It's more of the same. Here's what you have to ask yourself. Has black kids getting on a bus going to suburbia helped them intellectually? If it has, then put them on the bus. If it hasn't, then you need to find a new approach. And it hasn't. And of course, this school system understands that. But they want to be user-friendly to white parents. They do not want to threaten white parents. Okay? Black people don't have any place to run. They can't take their kids out of public schools and put them in private schools. But the suburbs can. So this system decided that it was going to not scare white parents. It was not going to do anything to make white parents take their kids out of the school system. So that meant sacrificing black kids. It's a compelling, and they went to court and said it's a compelling interest for us to diversify. The compelling interest is for you to educate those children that you have been mandated to educate. Damn, you ain't mandated to be a social worker. You're mandated to educate my children. And you went to court, and the courts agreed with them, all with except Central. We won our suit. But the compelling interest is that diversity. And it looks good on paper. We're integrated. Yeah. In the lunchroom and in the restroom, you're not integrated in the classroom. And this is what they have done.
Yeah, this one thing I'm interested in is, you know, the terms like desegregation and integration.
Well,
not the same
this
thing.
Is. And, no, yeah. And here's what you have to understand here, though. Here, it's ridiculous. In other words, Jefferson County has, what they did is this. They created attendance zones. Now, there's no attendance zone for the West End. The attendance zone exists in only neighborhoods where whites are in the majority. So what that means is that if you're a white student and you decide that you want to attend your home school, it's open for you. Mm-hmm. Because the 15 to 40 integration can go 15 to 40. So what that means is, according to housing patterns and the number of people moving in and out of the neighborhood, that the number of blacks in each of these attendance zones can be adjusted to the number of whites that want to go to the home school. The more whites who decide to go to the home school, the fewer blacks that are bused. Okay? So we are a commodity. We are fuel that drives this integration. I'll take a few more of the unfortunates this time. It's 15 to 40. Mm-hmm. Okay? In other words, but never, see, we keep three high schools closed. Open. Integration keeps three high schools that normally would be closed because people in those neighborhoods are not having babies and they don't warrant having a high school. But if they can reach down into the West End and get more of us, we can keep that high school open.
Hmm. You think you see that as part of?
Of course it is.
Which high schools are those? Those are
Atherton, mm-hmm. Wagner, probably J-Town.
These are suburban.
Yes.
High schools, yeah.
Yeah.